Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, August 18th, 2013. This is episode 1006. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Bespoke Post, a product subscription club for men. Bespoke Post's monthly box of awesome keeps you up on the latest in food, drink, fashion, and more. For 20% off your first box, visit bespokepost.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time, yes, indeed, for your worst nightmare, a geek with his own radio show. Hey, how are you? Actually, I may be a geek, but you don't have to be. This is a show for anybody who wants to know more about what's going on in, I used to say computers. Do we even talk about computer? I guess we do a little bit. Whatever happened to computers? Oh, they're in your pocket. That's what happened. So we'll talk about computers, whether they're on your desk, in your lap, or on your in your pocket, or on your head, or on your wrist. We'll talk about smartphones, which we've decided not to call smartphones, because who uses phones anymore? Mobiles. That sounds like something you put over a baby's crib. It's not. We got to find a name, because who makes phone calls? Not very often anymore with these things. A computer in your pocket. We talk about home theater and digital photography. Our digital photographer, Chris Marquardt's back. He'll be on. What?
You gasped. I wanted to upload a picture.
Oh, a picture, yeah.
For the contest.
For the contest. Well, I think you have a little more time. It's not a contest. Yeah. Contest implies there might be some winnings involved. No.
Right.
We just look at pictures. Your winnings would be somebody noticed your pictures.
We'll say your name on the radio.
Were you? That's, by the way, Heather Hammond, who is our call screener. We got Nathan Strahan at the Strayton as the musical director back in the... at the transmitter shack. He's in the transmitter shack, actually.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. He's the guy who's cranking the knobs. And he's got to tune the super heterodyne transceiver to make sure that this radio show is beamed directly into that box in your car, on your desk, in your shower. Show of hands. How many of you are listening to this? No, put your hands back down. Oh, my gosh. Do you play Plants vs. Zombies?
No,
do you know that game?
I guess I don't, since I haven't heard of it before.
Shocked to hear that you do not play that game.
Say it again. Plants versus
Zombies. Well, you're in luck, because the greatest game of all time awaits you.
Okay.
It is a... how do I describe this? It's a zombie game. Everybody loves zombies.
Yeah.
They're the most cuddly little creatures ever. But they're attacking your house, trying to eat your brains. You know how zombies can get. And so your job is to, oddly enough, garden in order to avoid being eaten by zombies. It turns out you have some very vicious plants.
So the more carrots I grow, the more
zombies are at bay?
Yeah, well,
it's not. You've got pea shooters. You've got cabbage guns. So you're planting a garden, and the zombies are marching in, and the plants... It's plants versus zombies.
I totally get it, because zombies eat meat and they don't.
They're not
any
vegetarians, so yeah. Well, they will eat your plants too, but so you got to keep them.
They really want to eat you.
You lose the game if they get your brains, but it's a challenging game. It's a fun game, and it was one of the. It's interesting because it was originally created by PopCap Games as a flash game on the desktop, but when the iPad came out, it was such a natural place for it. That it took off, and it was my opinion, perhaps, certainly in the top five, if not the best iPad game of all time, because it's not somebody trying to shoehorn a game into the touch interface. It's just naturally touchy, because you plant the things. It's just it fits the UI. Well, the only reason I bring it up is because the new one just came out. So this is the last show I'm going to do for the next couple of months, because I'm going to be busy defending my garden against zombie attack. It's really a fun game, actually. It's quite an entertaining game. And they did something which I guess is hip and with it and timely. It's free. Now, the original Plants vs. Zombies wasn't free. Well, you know, mobile games can't be too expensive, so I don't know, it's a few bucks. But what they're doing this time is what everybody's doing. They, you know, these PopCap guys are no fools. They give you the game for free, but then they get you because they have a little store and you can buy stuff to make the game easier. You can buy coins. You can buy plants. And what people have learned, both game manufacturers and players, is you spend a lot more money on a game if it's free than you ever did buying it. Lots more money. And I've told you the sad tale of my donuts, right? Oh, this is, by the way, and I swore after this I would never play in another Electronic Arts game again. And unfortunately, OMG Pop, which created Plants vs. Zombies, was purchased by Electronic Arts. But I still consider them an ouch. I'm going to play this game. It's really fun. But I'm not giving them any money because I've spent $300 on donuts, and that's not allowed. Not real donuts, not donuts you can eat. No, I don't get the benefit of getting fat from these donuts. These are in-game donuts for that stupid Simpsons Tapped Out game. And I've been playing it for 8 or 9 months, and it's one of those farming games where, you know, but it's nice because it's got Homer and Marge and Bart and Lisa, and the, so it's like your friends, and every once in a while, Homer will pop up on my phone and say, push notification, which it just cracks me up every time. Not so popular in the meetings that I go to, but other, you know, because he's loud. But is that Homer in your pocket? Yeah. Every once in a while, I get a look of acknowledgement from another addict to this horrible game, The Simpsons Tapped Out. I don't like freemium because they suck you in. And you start playing the game. And if you want to get the Springfield sign, oh, you know, it's like the Hollywood sign lines for Springfield. It's like donuts. It's like 120 donuts. And how do you get donuts? Oh, you can earn donuts. 3 donuts at a time. Or you go to the donut store and you buy donuts. And I calculated it, and I've spent more than $300 on one game in donuts. That's ridiculous. But they get you. They suck you in. And then Electronic Arts crashed my game. And in a way, I think they were doing me a favor. Maybe they knew. There may be this algorithm in the game where, uh-oh, this guy's got a donuts, Jones. We better cut him off. I've been cut off. They crashed the game. I emailed Electronic Arts. They said, well, send us the IDs of all the devices it crashes on. So I send them with great difficulty. I think I've told this story before. Great difficulty, the IDs of the 10 devices that crashed on. And then I pointed out, and everybody who visits my town crashes. And then they sent me a note back saying, well, you're right. It crashed me too. But we'll get back to you. It's been 2 weeks. They're never going to fix it. But I'm considering myself off the hook. So I'm warning you, don't ever play this game because it will suck you in. And now I'm going to try. I'm going to do something unheard of. This is the equivalent of swimming the English Channel. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to try to play Plants vs. Zombies 2 without buying anything. No cold hard currency. I'm going to make this free game be free if it kills me. Look at this, $3.99 for a thing that ignites peas for double damage. $3, that's American. That's not imaginary coin. The snow pea shoots peas that slow zombies. That's $4 too. So they get you because there's a lot of this stuff, right? But, you know, $2.99 at a time, it's a latte. And that's why I want to tell you this cautionary tale. It adds up, folks. You don't want to be one of those people, one of those nitwits who spends $300 on a mobile video game. That would be dumb. Who would do that? They keep pulling me in. So I swear. My girlfriend, Lisa, she bought some stuff. She said, oh, I bought some stuff. I said, no. She tried, you know, she's, come on.
Oh,
it's just a couple of bucks. Come on. I said, no. I am going to beat this game without giving Electronic Arts one penny because they already owe me 300 donuts. We shall see. We shall see. Only a twit would do that, give them money to play a video game. What kind of crazy talk is that? 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. If you want to share your tale of whoa, whoa, whoa. That's how Keanu Reeves says it. Whoa. Your tale of whoa, whoa with me, 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the United States of America. If you're outside the U.S., we got calls yesterday from England, from somewhere else.
Düsseldorf,
Germany.
In the house.
They listen on the internet. No problem. Use Skype. It's free. We're going to go to the phones. Call Heather. Let's get you on right now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Web 4111. We have a chat room. If you go to the website, techguylabs.com, you can get into the chat room. Web 4011 says, I was in the shower when you asked, and I did not raise my hand. Thank you. 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Somebody said from Canada, too. I can't verify that. I'm only going off of what the phone company tells me. But you will be calling into our beautiful Tech Guy Labs here in Northern California. Heather Hammond will answer the call. We'll query you. We'll grill you. We'll prep you. We'll polish and shine you up and then put you on the line. And Heather, you've done that to somebody, some wonderful person. Why don't we pick the first call of the day? Who should it be?
George in Santa Monica. He has a great question for you.
All right.
About privacy.
George Santa Monica, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, George.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I am well. How are you, sir?
Well, I watch you and I watch Steve Gibson, and I notice that Google, people can read your emails, right? But if I sent you a letter with the same content in that letter as the email, but if somebody opens that letter, they get fined like $5,000 imprisonment.
It's a federal crime. That's right.
Right. Now, how can the email with the same content not be a crime?
Because nobody made it a crime. So the Congress made it a crime to open and read email, made it a federal crime. Snail mail, I should say.
Snail mail,
yeah.
Okay.
But they never bothered to do that for electronic communications. In fact, our vaunted Department of Justice has ruled, has held, although no one has yet challenged this in court, that email that is over 6 months old is abandoned. And they don't need a search warrant or anything to read that. They can just say, hey, that's abandoned, and nobody owns it because it's old. Now, I should point out the same thing is true in an office. When you're on a phone call and your boss picks up the phone to listen, is she on a personal call? I don't know, Smithers. And he picks up the phone. If he hears you, the law says, if he hears you talking personal, he has to hang up. He has a legal requirement not to eavesdrop on you. On the other hand, because Congress never passed a law against it, and the courts have upheld it time and time again, everything you do on a computer at work is fair game. There is no privacy at work. And there have been many court cases to test that. And anything you do on a computer, you're doing, the work can spy on you, can capture it, do anything they want with it completely legally because you're using their computer. Now, that's the same thing. The phone is their phone. But and it's because laws take a long time to catch up, and tech moves so darn fast.
Well, maybe it'll make a change.
Yeah, I mean, we could ask for it to make a change. Until then, I'll be honest. We also have learned in this whole PRISM revelation, as things have come out, that it turns out for years the post office has been scooping up what they call the metadata. They can't read inside the envelope, but they can take a picture of the to and from addresses, and they are putting that in a database. And we have learned in all of this that this so-called metadata, not the contents of your email or your mail, but who it's to, who it's from, the subject line in the case of email, all of that can be amazingly valuable. Once you start stitching it together, you can see a web of communications. It's very helpful in tracking down terrorists. So they collect that also, and they don't. The feeling is, while they do believe that anything under 6 months old, they say we're gonna ask for legal approval, usually not publicly, but from a FISA court before.
Thanks for letting us use your brain.
Isn't it good news, George? Hey, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. It's funny because this whole conversation has changed considerably. Remember, it was just a few months ago that Microsoft put out those Scroogled ads. Did you ever see those? And before that, the Gmail man. Microsoft, in hindsight, kind of pettily and perhaps even disingenuously put out ads saying Google's reading your email. That's how they know what ads to give you, because they're reading your email. Well, anybody who's looking for spam, any email system that kills spam is also reading your email. That's how it works. If it didn't read the email, it couldn't kill the spam. Now, the problem is the word read implies like there's a human being
with little reading glasses looking over each and every, oh, I see what George has been doing.
That's not really what's happening in the case of Google or Microsoft. Their computers are scanning it for keywords. And if the keyword is Viagra, boom, it's spam. But if the keyword is mom's funeral, you might get, kind of creepily, I admit, an ad for funeral services in your on your Gmail page. Same thing, though. It's a computer looking for keywords. It's not some human reading it. That's why our language has also not really kept up with what's going on. But for a long time, this was the conversation. Oh, Google reads your mail. And Microsoft made a big deal about the Gmail man. They've intentionally personified it. Of course, now we know that Microsoft had been letting the federal government read your mail for years before this ad. So come on, Microsoft. They were the first... the first company to keel over for the NSA and say, yeah, sure, whatever you want. That long before Google did, Microsoft said, come on in, guys. So who do you worry more about, the Gmail man or the G-man? And that's really the fundamental question. You know, Google's reading your mail, if read is the right word. They scan electronically. They scan mail for keywords, for ads, for marketing reasons. They're not really even, singling you out. What they do is they tell advertisers, hey, we have 33,000 people who are talking about gardening in their email. Would you like to put a hose ad next to the page? And you could tell it doesn't work all that well because the ads aren't that well targeted. On the other hand, the federal government is, and you know, probably this was all very benign. It was designed to not track individuals, not track American citizens, but merely to try to track down terrorists. And I think that's a good thing to do. The problem is that we are learning that you can't trust government employees any more than you could trust every human being out there. And, you know, when it's a kind of a sexy phone call, they might just, you know, pass it along to others. We know this has happened, that you are being spied on. And which is worse? You know, I don't even think it's so advertising, big deal. Even passing around sexy phone calls, okay. What's really scary is if they decide, a government, for instance, decides that it gets a little less benign and decides it wants to start targeting its citizens for political reasons, they've got lots of material now. Lots. And they've been saving it, you know. They're saving it up just in case for a rainy day. So that's what scares me. Oh, our government would never do that. J. Edgar Hoover never collected information on Martin Luther King. That would never happen here. That's what scares me. And so advertising, okay, yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, and by the way, you can opt out. You don't have to do that. You can either use it in an incognito fashion, the browsers let you do that, or just not use Gmail. Use a mail service that doesn't provide you with advertising. You can't opt out of government surveillance. There's no button for that. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. ASK-LEO. That's the number. Go back to the phones, Leo. Okay. Wait, right? Yeah? Yeah. I don't know where I'm looking. I'm looking to the heavens. What should I do now? I should talk to Brian in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Leo, long-time listener.
Thank you.
I got a question for you. I've been with the iPhone ever since it's come out, and after about on my iPhone 5, after having it replaced five times.
Oh, wow.
Android.
Five yeah. times. That's,
yeah.
I have to say, in all, in defense of Apple, that's unusual. I still have my iPhone 5 and it hasn't failed. I know lots of people. So I don't know why you've had such bad luck. That's terrible. But so you're thinking, you're thinking maybe I don't want to wait to find out what Apple does. You know, September 10th, 3 weeks from now, they're going to announce a new iPhone. Maybe you want to wait for that? No?
No, I was thinking about switching to the Motorola X. I wanted to get your opinion on the Motorola X.
Love it. Now, I think it's actually a very good choice for an iPhone user. It's a good introduction to Android for a few reasons. One, it's very pure Android. It doesn't have a lot of customizations. You know, Samsung's lately really added so much stuff, so much icing to the Android cake that you can hardly see the cake. HTC as well. But the Moto X, because Google owns Motorola now, is very sweet, very pure. It feels nice in the hand. I think anybody who's used to the smaller 4-inch screen will feel comfortable at the 4.7-inch size. It is roughly the same dots per inch as the iPhone 5, so you don't have to worry about losing your retinas display. It's the same kind of display. It's 10 dots per inch less, not much. And I think that there are features, you know, do you use Siri?
No, not really.
No, nobody does, because... And I think the same thing. Google, arguably Google Now is better, but not so much better that it's reliable enough that you could use it every time. So,
okay.
I had a dream about using Google Now. Last night I was trying to find out how many Kmart stores there were, and the thing wouldn't work for me. And it was really a little too close to the belt. Although I did, the first thing I did when I got up is I said, "Okay, Google Now, how many Kmart locations are there?" And it actually found it right away. In fact, I just did it, and there are 1,307 Kmart locations. Don't ask me why I was dreaming about how many Kmart locations there are. I have no idea. The inner mind is a very strange thing. But I think you'll like it. It's clean. It's simple. Tell me what apps you use the most. That would be the only issue. There's some games. For instance, I mentioned Plants vs. Zombies 2. It's not out yet on Android. It's only out on iPhone. But Dots, which is a very popular iPhone game, is out. Just came out on Android. So there aren't that many things that you can't get on Android. But what are the apps you really use?
Basically Facebook.
Okay.
Twitter, okay. And then podcasts. That's about
it. Yeah. In fact, you'll want to use Dog Catcher, which is a very nice Android podcast client, probably the best I've ever used. There are many choices. Okay. That's the one I use. I think you're gonna like the Moto X. You're gonna like the customizability. Are you on AT&T?
I'm on Verizon.
I'm
switching to either AT&T or T-Mobile.
Okay, so AT&T's getting the Moto X August 23rd in 5 days. Verizon hasn't announced, but it's my understanding. I've read somewhere that it's August 29th. So. You know, both of them getting it by the end of the month. The difference is AT&T will have the customizer, which is really interesting. You can go online. By the way, the Moto X is the only smartphone made in the USA, or assembled anyway in the USA. I like that. They bought a Texas plant, and they're building them there. And because it's in the USA, you can customize it and get it within 4 days. They have a variety of colors, accent colors. You can change the startup screen. You can have it engraved, all at no extra cost. I think that's nice. So, yeah, I think for an iPhone user, that is probably the best Android phone choice. All right?
Thanks.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I'm sorry you've had such trouble with the iPhone 5. I do have to say, I don't think that's common. And the good news is Apple's very good about replacing these things. I mean, I'm sure he just brought it in. They gave him a new one, But why are they dying so fast? It was a comp. Let me ask you, Heather. Have you ever done math in your dreams?
Oh, wow. That's an interesting question. Daydreams, yeah.
Yeah, but no, I've never done them in my dreams, and I was doing it. I woke up, and I was... Remember Jeff Needles, our little intern that we had, who was like this business kid?
And
he was saying, why does Kmart do sponsored announcements in the store? And I said, well, Jeff, do the math. And I literally, in my dream, I'm saying, imagine they do 50 a day. They charge a buck each. That's $50 a day per store. How many stores are there? Now, I asked Google Now in my dream Kmarts there were, but I didn't get an answer back, so I said, well, I don't know, maybe there's 20,000. That was a big mistake. There weren't. But I calculated in my dream, that means they're making $150 million a year, and the math was correct.
We need to keep your brain in a jar after you pass and study it. That's very interesting.
I don't understand it. I've never done that ever.
That is so interesting. What I do is I always add numbers on license plates or wherever I see them.
You do that?
I calculate them in my head.
Oh, so you have a math mind too.
I wonder what that'll say.
No, well, no. But if you're doing like addition on license plates, there's something going on.
Yeah.
Something going on. I don't know what it is. Well, anyway, Google Now failed me in my dreams, but just now it worked. So, but this is really the truth about both Siri and Google Now. In general, the dictation is not reliable enough. Google Now is, I think, more accurate and more reliable. Siri, I get all the time. Sorry, the network's down. I can't help you. Usually after dictating a paragraph, which is very frustrating, you know. But so Google's a little more reliable than that. I do dictate text messages and emails all the time on both platforms. I think it's great. There are some other things that make the Moto X kind of a compelling phone. One of the things I really like, and I expect to see this in a lot of phones. So one of the things Motorola did is they designed a specialized chipset. They call it the X8, that has two chips that can, without using much power, just sipping on power, watch what's going on. So it's kind of it's a phone that without being on, you know, without the screen being on, is situationally aware. And that means it can listen for you. You can say, okay, Google Now, and it'll wake up, as it just did. Should be careful saying that. Hello, Leo. And then the other thing you can do with it is you can say, hey, when I'm within range of this Bluetooth or that Bluetooth, like the one in the car, one in my computer here, unlock yourself. These are safe places. You can be unlocked when you're in Bluetooth range. And that's nice because the wake-up thing doesn't work when it's locked. So they're also selling these little clips. They're going to sell these little clips that you can swipe or put it on that will make it unlocked. So that's kind of a clever idea. I like this phone. It also is the really interesting, and this is something that I think that there's even apps in the Android store that'll do this. But you can, when it's in your pocket, you know, you can pull it out of your. It can be off in your pocket. You pull it out of your pocket and you twist your wrist three times, and it wakes up the phone, the camera, so you can take a picture right away. And you just tap it to take a picture. So it's a very fast way to take a very bad picture. That's horrible. 8888 Ask Leo. And battery life's excellent on the Moto X. It's as good as the iPhone 5. One thing Apple's done very well is maximize battery life. The rumors on the new iPhone, you know, and I got to say, they're just rumors. We'll know September 10th. But the rumors on the new iPhone include improved battery life. That's great. I think that is something that these companies kind of underestimate or have in the past underestimated the importance of. And Apple and now Motorola clearly paying a lot of attention. And realize that's a big selling point. If you can, you know, get me 18 hours and I'll be happy. There's also a rumor, I'm not sure I credit it, that there will be a fingerprint reader in the next iPhone. Well, we'll find out. September 10th. Not a bigger display, no. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Nathan Straighten, our musical director. It's good to have you back, Nathan. Let's go back to the phones. Steve is in La Habra, California, our next caller. Hi, Steve. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I have a patent that was published. It's a high-tech patent. I just drove all the way to Palo Alto to meet with the folks at the AT&T Foundry, and I can't be driving all over the country. Is there a place like Tech Writers Get Together online, someplace where I could put this out so that they could write about it, and then the industry finds out?
No, not that I know of. We tech writers do sometimes follow each other on Facebook or Google Plus. I go to Google Plus for sure. You might also take a look at, PR Newswire, which will charge you, will release press releases, and they send them to most of the tech writers. But it's expensive. What is your intent? You want to let people know this patent exists?
Yeah, so I can. It's a new type of cell phone, and I won't. You know, now I'm looking at an appointment with the people down in Dallas that run Samsung.
Are you trying to find somebody to manufacture it?
To take over, you know, to license out the patent.
Uh huh. Well, you know, I don't. Tech writers are not going to write about it. I can tell you that right now because it's complicated, and B, patents, especially technology patents right now, are a minefield because there are a lot of people, frankly, you sound like one, they're called non-practicing entities. They're people who have, it's so easy to get a patent, and you look at some of these patents out there, they're absurd, they're obvious, they're trivial, but the patent office nevertheless have granted them. And then these companies who never intend to make or use this patent, go around trying to get licenses, and if failing that, we'll sue. These are, they're in the common parlance, they're called patent trolls. In the patent world, they're called, in a less inflammatory fashion, non-practicing entities, or NPEs. It's because they never intended to make anything. So the reason for patents existing, and it goes back to our founding fathers and our the very earliest days of this country, the patent system was created to further the arts and sciences. And it was a very clever idea. They said, in order to take something that you've invented and make it public so that everybody can benefit from it, we're going to give you exclusive license to it for a period of, I think it was originally 12 years, now, depending on the patent, 21 years. We're going to give you exclusive, doesn't matter how long, exclusive license to it for a limited period of time. At that point, and in order to get that license, you have to reveal publicly how you do this thing, make this drug, build this machine. And in order to get the patent and get the exclusive license, you publish all the details, and then after the patent expires, anybody can make it. We all benefit. The pharmacology is a great example. So a pill like Viagra is expensive to develop. The company that makes it puts a lot of money into it, and they're granted a patent and the right to make it exclusively for a certain number of years, at which point it becomes public and the generics come out. And I think in many cases, when you buy, you know, go to the doctor, they'll prescribe a generic because it's exactly the same because the patent reveals the manufacturing process. But the company, Pfizer or Bayer or whoever, got to, you know, capitalize on it for enough time so they could amortize the cost to incent them to make it in the first place. You're not going to do the research making something if you can't make money off of it. Now, there's two ways to go. Some companies use trade secrets. They say, we don't want to ever publish this. Coca-Cola never patented the recipe for Coca-Cola because to do so, they would have had to reveal it, and it would have become public after a certain period of time. So they made it a trade secret. And we don't, you know, you can, nobody else can make Coke, right? Only Coke can make Coke because nobody knows that secret recipe. So patents, I think, are a very clever way of getting stuff out. Now, in the last few years, the patent office has started to approve software patents, and this is much more controversial because nothing's being made. There's no machine. There's no prototype. There's no thing to manufacture. It's just software. And things like one-click purchasing is a very famous patent that Amazon owns. The idea that you can go to a website, click once, and it's yours. Man, that's worth a lot of money, isn't it, to Amazon? So they patented it, and they've been suing people who do the same thing. And there's quite a bit of an argument whether that's something that's trivial, obvious, and shouldn't be patented. It's not a machine. It's not a new way of doing things. A lot of people think software patents are a bad idea. But what's really made it a bad idea is the number of people who are going around who never made anything, never intended to make anything, but just thought up as many things as they could, went to the patent office, got patents, and now are suing companies, making millions, and really putting a real dent in innovation. So many companies now are engaged, embroiled in these phony patent lawsuits. It's estimated billions of dollars every year lost completely to court costs to defend, you know, yourself against a patent troll, a non-practicing entity. So it sounds to me, caller, like that's what you are, to be honest. You don't, you've thought of something, you went, you got a patent for it, you never intended to make it. Now you're going around, you want to hold up companies and say, hey, I want some money for this. I thought of it. You're using it. Yeah, but they made it. They made it. You never made it. So I don't expect you to get much support from the tech writing community. We're not real fans of that. Adam in Bakersfield, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Adam.
How you doing, sir? I love your show. Long-time listener. I had a question about... I bought a new Samsung Galaxy Note 8.0. And I remember that a few years ago, you talked about when someone buys a new computer, they can go to a website, and this website will help them to delete all the preloaded programs.
Yeah, this was for Windows.
Yes.
PC Decrapifier, it was called, if you'll excuse my French. And it's a great idea.
Yeah, is there something like that for my Samsung Galaxy
Note 8. Well, yes and no. There's no automated tool because, as you've probably already noticed, you can't uninstall those programs, can't you? It just says get info. It doesn't say uninstall.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in order to remove stuff from Android device, you first have to get root privileges. You have to root the device. And then that, and it's easy to do. It's generally, if you follow the instructions very carefully, if you make a mistake, you can do something called brick your system and make it unusable. So you got to be very careful. But if you follow the instructions by the letter, especially an older device like your Note, you'll be able to root it. And then you can just uninstall whatever you don't want.
Yeah, I'm just having a hard time going through all these apps, these preloaded apps.
I agree. I don't know why they do this. And Samsung's only gotten worse. You should look at the Galaxy S4. There's like four stupid games I don't even want on there. What? And it's ironic because the Galaxy S4 ships with 16 gigs of memory. It doesn't have a lot of memory, and more than 12 of them are taken up by this crap.
Wow. Wow.
So, I agree. Here's the thing. You could search for root and the name of your device or go to xda-developers.com and look up your device. And it's usually very simple, especially on older stuff, to root it and then delete what you don't want. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about tech, computers, cell phones, home theater. Our digital photographer, Chris Marquardt, joins us. A little photographic myth busting at the bottom of the hour. 33 and a third after the hour. We did that intentionally, you know, at this very show. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, our website is techguylabs.com. You can go there and find answers to all the questions. You can also find all the links we talk about. We'll even give you a chance to comment. So if you have hey, you're full of it. That's not a patent troll. You can comment there as well. Love it if you do. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the primary place to go. So we're going to move on. Hello, Heather Hammon. Who should I talk
Leo?
To next?
Let's talk to Carl in Burbank.
Hello, Carl in Burbank. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I had Heather on and not you, Carl. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Hi, Carl. What can I do for you?
Hi, Leo. Like your show a lot. I'm interested in buying an iPad, a Kindle, or a tablet. And the purpose for this is I'm starting to play music, and I want to be able to put my iTunes account on it, download sheet music, and other musical-type apps.
There's really no question at all when it comes to that because... Well, first of all, you said the word iTunes, and only Apple's devices support iTunes that way. But more importantly, music. Because the iPad really has been out for the longest and is the king of the hill in this regard, there are by far more music apps for, including transcription apps for the iPad than all the others combined. So if music is your goal, there you just have to get an iPad. Now, there will be a new iPad coming out in October. I'm certain of that. So if you can wait a month or two.
Okay. Okay. Very good, because I wasn't sure if you could put iTunes onto Kindle or anything like
well,
that.
Well, here's what you can do. You can't put iTunes on anything but an Apple device. Apple, you know, iPads come with iTunes. But you can put something like DoubleTwist, which is a music playing program on your computer and on your Android tablet, and it will sync up. It'll play the music. If the music is copy protected, it won't play, but uncopy, and nothing on iTunes has been copy protected for some years now. That music will play just fine. So if it's just getting the music that you have on your desktop onto your tablet, you can use anything. It's the music programs where the iPad really is the only choice.
Okay. Great, Leo. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And, there isn't so much difference between a Kindle and an Android device and an iPad that I would say, work extra hard to use the Kindle. Not by any means. In fact, the Kindle is the least powerful of the bunch because Amazon really is just making a device that is a portal to Amazon's properties, to buying Amazon stuff, to reading Amazon books, you know, the e-books, to playing Amazon music and watching Amazon TV and movies. That's really what the Kindle is. It's designed to be that, and that's why it's so inexpensive. Now, the oddball out, and by the way, my favorite tablet in the market today is the Nexus 7 from Google. It's so inexpensive, $229 for the same device that, you know, it's close to an iPad mini. So Apple charges about $110 more for the same thing. A little bit different screen configuration. The iPad mini's squarer. That's another reason why it's better for music. It's the right aspect ratio for sheet music. But boy, yeah, you know, the Nexus 7 is a lot less expensive. And if you're not doing music, there are things that it's better at or is good at. Certainly a better screen than the iPad mini. But if you're doing music, it's really straightforward. There's no second best. It's iPad and that's it. Dale in Palmdale, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Not too bad. I'm trying to figure out a problem that I'm having. I've had a Slingbox for quite a while, and I absolutely love it. But here just recently, for whatever reason, I did an update on my phone because I watched it on my phone, and for whatever reason, I'm having to unplug my HDMI wire in order for it to work. Otherwise, I don't get the signal.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like... So if the HDMI is plugged in, it won't work?
Right. And I called up Sling, and they're blaming it on DirecTV. And I called up UB and DirecTV. They're saying that it has something to do with the HDCP.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. That's what it is. You're right. I blame DirecTV.
But at the same time, I've been using it for years, and all of a sudden...
Well, they may have... HDCP is copy protection.
Right, I know
what that is. Copy protection. Well, anytime you have the word copy protection, you know what that really means is you're not going to be able to do some of the things you want to do. And it may be that the new DirecTV, you know, suddenly implemented it where they didn't before. I would check the... I would make sure you have a HDCP-compliant cable... HDMI 1.4, but I think I have to say if the Sling folks say it's the DirecTV box, they probably have seen this before.
Yeah, they said to go to their website and check their FAQs, and I went there and looked at that, and all I saw on there was a bunch of people saying the same thing I was saying, is that I can't use it no more.
Well, that
doesn't do me a lot.
So that tells you is at least it's not something broken on the Sling.
Right.
That it is something, and I think it is. It's something that they must have turned on the DirecTV box.
Yeah. Can I ask you one real quick question?
So sad. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in regards to the Samsung Galaxy Note 3. Have you heard any word on when it's coming out, and what's the word on it?
September 4th, they're going to announce it. It's our best guess that they will have it available within 3 weeks. That's kind of the norm nowadays. And I don't know which carriers will have it. Certainly AT&T, which had the Note 2. I'm hopeful that Verizon and the others will also carry it. Nowadays, Samsung and is putting it on every carrier, and I wouldn't, you know, they don't all do it at once, maybe, because they got to put their little carrier. I want to say a word I can't.
Okay.
They want to mark it with their little carrier markings to let you know it's theirs. But that takes a little while. But as soon as they do that, I would bet you the Galaxy S, the Note 3, will be available on all carriers. You like the big screens?
Yeah, well, the main reason why I like the big screen is because I'm going to be using the Sling Box.
To watch it, yeah.
The bigger the screen, the better it looks.
Yeah, you're right.
I was going to go with the S4, but the S4, because it's got the 1080p, but it has a smaller screen. But I'm figuring that the Note 3 will probably have the 1080p also, and it'll probably have just as many features, if not more, than the S4.
It'll be very much like an S4 blown up, is my understanding, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Okay, well, thank you, Leo. Appreciate all the help.
Thanks for the call. Yeah. A lot of interest in the Samsung Note. I loved the Note 2. It was a big phone. This one's going to be even bigger. And that really, to me, speaks to the fact that we don't really use it as a phone that much. Because you look kind of silly holding up a big slab to your ear, but it's not. But you don't do it that often. Or if you do, maybe you use a wired headset or Bluetooth. But more what we're using them for is computers. So a bigger screen makes a lot of sense. You want to see more. What I've read on the Note 3 is not encouraging. It sounds like it isn't. It's not a big bump in spec. that may not be the fastest thing ever. But, you know, we won't know till September 4th, and that's not so far off, so you can find out that. Boy, is this going to be a big September and October. Lots of announcements. We know the iPhone 5, I think it's going to be called the 5S, whatever. The next iPhone will be announced September 10th. IFA, the big teleconference, mobile phone conference, is coming up in Barcelona September 5th. So there'll be a number of announcements there. I expect some announcements from Nokia. Samsung, HTC, I think they're going to announce the HTC One, what do they call it, Mega, the big screen HTC One. It's quite a bit of excitement going on. This is a great area, you know. Used to be computers where it was all happening, now it's in mobile devices. 88, did I say Berlin? Barcelona, yeah, that's where IFA will be. 8888, Ask Leo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Everybody, get on the ground. Do the Rock Lobster. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It is the best party song ever. I think you're right, Aaron B. Aaron B in our chat room. That's a good place to go. Hang out with the smart kids, the cool kids, the wiseacres, the kids in the back of the class. We got them all. Kids throwing spitballs. You can get there by going to the website, techguylabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and we're taking your calls at 8888. Ask Leo. I can't. Can you do that?
Oh, not at all.
No, but I can do the lobster dance because it involves a lot of lying down. I'm very good at that. I am superior at dancing
lying on the floor,
on the ground,
and flailing.
Flailing. I can do that.
Kate Pearson voice.
That's how does it. Bill and Culver City is really wondering why he called the show right now. Hi, Bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Hey, thank you so much for taking my call.
Well, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Well, I've been listening to you for a long time, but this is the first time I've really needed your help because I'm dealing with my son, who is just becoming a senior in high school.
I've been there. I'm 1 year ahead of you, okay?
He's got a MacBook Pro that he bought in 2009.
Awesome.
But he says it's not running very fast anymore, and it's full, and he wants to get a new one.
Of course he does.
Of course. And he wants to get a new one with a solid-state drive in it.
Yes.
And I can't really find any other PCs or anything that comes with a solid-state drive.
Almost all laptops, PC or Mac, now do come with solid-state drives, especially if you get the PC category, the Ultrabook. Ultrabook's generally solid-state. And really, you do want to... Nowadays, I don't buy a computer desktop or laptop that doesn't have a solid-state drive. It makes such a difference in performance.
Oh, yeah. So here's my question. Can we upgrade his current MacBook Pro?
Oh, yeah.
By putting in a solid-state drive? Here's his real concern. His real concern is he knows somebody who has one that died after 5 years, and he's already had it for a while.
Well, laptops don't last as long as desktops because they're, especially with high school kids, thrown around a little bit and so forth. It's 4 years old. That's about right.
Okay.
I wouldn't expect it to go a lot longer than that. The issue about putting an SSD in there, you can because SSDs have SATA interfaces,
right,
but you won't get the benefit of the speed on an SSD if it's SATA 1, the original SATA interface. And I'd have to look up that MacBook Pro to see because literally the drive is faster than the interface.
Right.
So the first place I go is MacSales.com. It's called Otherworld Computing. They sell solid-state drives. It's where I get all my aftermarket solid-state drives for Macintoshes. And you can see if they have one for that model. My guess is you're not going to get much of the benefit because, you know, the solid-state drives, just for people who want to know what we're talking about, they're flash drives based on flash RAM, just like the stuff in your camera. And they have several advantages. The reads are really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Writes are faster, but they're not as fast as the reads. The reads are where you get a lot of speed. But the negative is they cost more per gigabyte. So generally they're smaller drives, 128 or 256 gigabytes. And
you can get them up to almost a terabyte.
Well, yeah, you can, but you'll be paying a lot of money for it.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Now, the differential is going down fast. And that's why at this point I would say it's a very good idea to get a laptop with a solid-state drive. It makes a huge, huge difference. I just don't know if find out what the SATA interface is on that laptop. If it's SATA 2 or better, I think you're all right. Saturn 1 will be too slow.
The question he's really concerned about is, if I spend all this money to upgrade it,
right,
in a really nice solid-state drive, what's going to happen to the laptop in 2 years? Is it going to die?
Well, I don't know. He wants a new one.
Yeah, of course.
he wants a new one.
Of about $1,000 between the two approaches.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Actually, you can get him an 11-inch MacBook Air, which would be a perfect choice for about $1,000.
Well, he's looked at the Air. He'd rather have the Pro.
Oh, yeah. Now you're talking some money.
Yeah. $1,800.
Yeah. I love how these kids go, no, but I need one.
Yeah, I know.
I need one. But it is SATA 2, the 2009 MacBook. Is it a MacBook Pro?
Well, he said it is.
If it's the old one.
It's a third, yeah.
Okay. If it's a MacBook Pro, it does have SATA 2. That's probably fast enough to take the benefit. I would go to Otherworld Computing and see what they can put in that particular model. Some of the older ones, it was hard to get access to the hard drive, so you want to make sure it's doable. But these are really great, and I've put a number of SSDs from Otherworld Computing into not only my MacBooks, but into my old Mac Pro. I put one of their drives, and it made a huge difference.
Okay, so the real question amounts to the fact as to whether or not his current...
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to that, because it depends how well he's taken care of it. I mean, it could go for years. It could be on its last legs.
Yeah.
Impossible to tell. Has it had any problems up to date?
No, I don't think so. He hasn't mentioned any.
Yeah. It also is, and Cortron in the chat room is reminding us that, even if the laptop dies, you could take the SSD out and put in a new one.
That's true.
You're not losing your money.
Right. Not losing the money on the SSD.
You know, I would try to get it. Here's a compromise that'll make everybody happy. See if you can get another year out of it and say, hey, when you go to college, you'll get a new one.
Maybe. we're going to discuss it tonight.
So. There's a compromise you could try. That, A, gives him an incentive to get through the year with this one. At that point, it will be 5 years old. Probably worth getting a new one.
Okay.
And, B, it kind of gives him an incentive to go to college.
Oh, he has incentive to go to college.
Good man. I like that. That's great. Yeah.
And what he's doing, he's in the world of art, so to speak. He's a musician.
Oh, that's great.
And he does composing and arranging and things like that.
My son is the same way. He's a freshman in college in 1 week. Actually, Thursday he starts at Colorado, University of Colorado. He loves music, making music. He uses Logic Pro. Just got the new Logic Pro 10. And he's saying this thing is incredible. It's the best ever. He loves it. It works well on a laptop. He's using it on a MacBook Air, and it works very well. So,
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What's nice is he's taking that to school, and he's going to be able to, in his spare time in between studying Henry, he's going to be able to make music and have some fun.
Well, his studying is making music.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Then, you know what? If that's the case, there's going to be a time when you want to get some more horsepower.
Okay.
Yeah.
Might as well get it now.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Yeah. Or wait a year. You know what? The new Mac Pro in a year, say... Son, you get straight A's, you can get a Mac Pro in a year.
Well, he's going to get him. He wants a Mac Pro now, so that's not.
Well, you don't want the new. You want to wait for the new one, and Ben, you don't want to get the first new one because the first of anything is always a little wonky.
Yeah, I understand entirely.
Yeah, but the new one is beautiful. I tell you, Logic Pro 10 on what looks to be the most sleek hardware I've ever seen. The Mac Pro, it'll only set you back $5,000, but man, it is. Oh gosh, start saving now. You thought tuition was bad. You've seen this. The cylinder. You can go to apple.com/Mac Pro and see a very slick sales piece on it. But Apple is releasing a new Mac Pro. I think they'll announce it in October. Here's what I think the time frame is going to be. September, traditionally an iPod month. Obviously, new iPods, nobody cares. September is now the iPhone month. So we'll see. I believe two new iPhones, the 5S and the 5C, September 10th. The following month, updates for other hardware. Probably new MacBook Pros, the new Mac Pro, new iPads too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, in black and white. I hear the music. That means it's time for our Kodachrome guy, Chris Marquardt, our photo expert, digital photographer. Photographer.
Kodachrome in black and white.
Why are you in black and white? Is that intentional?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you have some guests wearing funny hats. And
I like
thought,
it.
As a photographer, black and white is just a very special thing. We'll in one of the next episodes, I want to do a little black and white special just to talk about why it is so special and why it has. It has the look that it has, and why it makes you feel in a certain way.
It makes you look like a TV show from the 50s. It's great.
I would have a different frame rate then, I guess. No, but today I want to pop another photography myth, and the myth is that say cheese produces the perfect smile.
Oh yeah, we do that. Do they what now? Obviously, say cheese not in Germany. What do they do in Germany? They must
have. Of course, we do that. We say cheese as well in English. Yes, in English we say cheese.
Sprechen Sie cheese?
So about that, yeah, but it doesn't cheese. Really work. You know how the results look really cheese. Artificial.
Yeah, it really looks like cheese. Say cheese. You see, it's like there's a strain. There's something strained about it.
Well, and the other thing that I see, especially in the United States, is the 1-2-3 click kind of thing, which also doesn't really work because
everybody freezes.
Exactly, because everyone has their photography face, and
if
you tell one be natural, that is just guaranteed to just not produce a natural result. Yeah. And unless it's a professional model, right? Or tell someone be yourself or look relaxed, it just does not work.
We all have the wrong results. That person in our life who, as soon as they know the camera's on them, they do a phony smile or they stick out their tongue. They do something.
Or duck face, yeah.
Duck face. And you can never get a good picture of them.
Exactly. And it's just announcing to take the photo is probably one of the worst things you can do. Yeah. So here's how you do that. If you do a photo session with someone and you tell them to pose, and you tell them, look this way, look that way, look into the light, do this, do that. You shoot between the poses. That's when people
let go for a second,
when they let their hair down, when they break that wall down that they have up in front of them. Or you coax them into some form of reaction. You tell them something really silly, something really stupid, but something that might make them laugh or might make them go, what? And all of a sudden you get a real reaction. All of a sudden it is real. And then the other thing is be ready to shoot lots. As something happens, if you have the camera on auto or rapid fire mode where it shoots several a second, that's when you want to go click, 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 click. Because then the funny things or the good things happen.
So I do that actually because there's a good, very close friend of mine. And you've actually shot her in a you know, model situation to get headshots of her.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as she knows I'm taking a picture, it's over.
Yes. But by the way, you can use the 1-2-3, but then shoot at 2.
1-2.
Don't wait till 3.
1-2-3. I like it.
By the way, I went on Wikipedia to look up what other countries say when you say cheese.
Yeah.
In Japan, it's chizu. In Korea, it's kimchi.
Kimchi.
And in most Latin American countries, apparently it's whiskey.
Say whiskey.
Say whiskey.
Whiskey.
Apparently gives you that smile.
No. I mean, can't you just say smile? But then, I mean, smiles is bad.
Smile does not work. So really, really, throw them off guard. Catch them off guard. Get them, say something weird that might just make them, that might evoke some reaction. And then as soon as a real reaction comes, that's when you have to be ready. That's when you have to shoot a lot. And then go ahead.
There's a website somebody in the chat room's passed along. From Smosh, an animated GIF fest of celebrities. I pose for quite a few pictures every day. We have people in studio and they want to take pictures, and I have the same. I probably have the same face I use every time. Apparently, celebrities do the same thing. Here's a Lindsay Lohan animated GIF, and it's her face is the same in hundreds of pictures. She doesn't.
Absolutely.
She has a look, and I think you could probably do that to me too. So those of us who pose a lot. We probably always do have that kind of same smile, but at least it looks natural.
Yeah. I would bet that some of those people, practice that in front of the mirror just to get this smile and then to learn how to move your face in order to get to that.
Well, if people take a lot of pictures of you, you kind of learn what it feels like in the musculature for that look. And then you just do it. I try not to because my face will freeze that way. So sometimes I smile sideways, sometimes I have a funny face. There's an art to a model. Maybe that's sometime we should talk about that. I mean, do you think anybody could learn how to pose for pictures?
Yes.
That is possible.
Yes, yes, it is possible. And as a photographer, you also have a lot of power over how to make people look good. There are a lot of, we have problem zones. There are the chins, there's the nose, there are the eyes, and the different things that people don't like about them in photos. That is usually because the photographer doesn't know how to move someone, how to pose someone, to get those areas to look good. I mean, I'm the guy with two chins, so if someone tells me to move my head backwards, that is not going to produce a nice result. So there are very simple things that you can actually do. Maybe we should also do a special modeling.
Yeah, modeling. How to model. Yeah. Actually, you're good. I've worked with you. You've actually posed me for headshots, and I think you're very good at getting people to look a little bit different.
Well, you're easy to work with.
I do a lot of modeling in my spare time.
Yes. What for?
Before pictures, mostly.
Good.
Chris Marquardt, he is the photo guy. You can find him at chrismarquardt.com. Now, let me tell you, there's quite a few consonants here. Marquardt. Maybe just go to discoverthetopfloor. You know how to spell that, .com. You can find all his workshops. And we have an assignment. We're asking people, not a contest, Heather, assignment. We're asking people to take pictures of...
Wet. Ooh, and the review is going to be in a few weeks. Heather, you have at least 2 weeks to go, so you can still submit one.
Oh, good. I just have to upload it. I actually found the great shot.
Oh, good. Not old ones.
No.
Has to be sometimes. Recent. Okay. The idea would be this is an excuse to go out and take more photos. Yes. I just got a new Olympus camera that is a waterproof. You can go 50 feet under the water.
Ooh.
Waterproof tough, the TG2. And so I could get some underwater wet stuff.
Good. Yeah. I don't think we have any of those yet.
Yeah, all right. Well, here's what you take the picture, you tag it with the word wet, you upload it to Flickr, which is free, flickr.com. There's no E in Flickr. Actually, you could either way. They apparently rented both websites. And then make sure you get it to the Tech Guy group because that's where we're looking. And in fact, you can go to the Tech Guy group on Flickr and see all the entries so far and do something different. No prize, just maybe we're going to mention your name on the show because we'll take a look at three of the best in a few weeks. Thank you, Chris Marquardt.
Absolutely.
Always a pleasure. You look good in black and white.
Yes.
I know. Chris is in Germany, so he didn't get this reference. I said, you look like Andy Griffith. But no, he has no idea what I'm talking
about. Too much of an American reference, yeah.
Actually, it could be Opie. Yeah, maybe he's Opie. Doesn't know who that means either.
Well, if you say so, right after this, I'm going to Google the
go watch
the
some Andy Griffith. Andy Griffith.
I will do that.
All right. Hey, thank you, Chris. Take care.
Absolutely.
Chris Marquardt joins us each and every week at this time to talk about digital photography. Remember, we're looking for pictures that illustrate the word or concept of wet. WET. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to this photo site, this Smosh site where they show how these celebrities, they have one face and they pose over and over again and it always looks the same. 8888 Ask Leah. We'll take a another phone call right after this. Leah Laporte, the tech guy. Somebody said there's no pictures of me and Heather. That's because we're on opposite sides of the glass. We're never together. We've never been seen at the same place at the same time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, a little gaga from our musical director, Nathan Statham. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. David in Ithaca. Hi, David. Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you.
Thanks
I've visited you. I'm the guy at Cornell who studied disgust.
Oh, I love this. We've mentioned this before. His specialty is the evolutionary benefit to the feelings of disgust that one feels. And it makes sense, because if you smell some food and you go, oh, that's disgusting, it would probably be a good idea not to eat it.
It is. We call it a strong avoidance.
Avoid that. which doesn't explain why people eat kimchi, but that's another matter.
That's not good upbringing, I guess. But from that same research on facial expressions of emotion, the conversation with Chris
smile,
to me because of the some people
can't do a genuine, you know, there's a difference between a genuine, what they call a Duchenne smile, and a fake smile.
Yeah, because your fake smiles, you just tighten the side of your cheek muscles, and it's so close to a grimace that it doesn't look like you're happy.
Exactly, but believe it or not, a lot of people can't smile genuinely on cue, and so the pictures just have that. And one of the things I was going to say, having not only seen all of those Google pictures of you, but also having one with you myself, is that you're pretty good genuine smiling.
I fake good. It well.
You fake sincerity very well.
I'm very good at faking sincerity. I just think happy thoughts.
Yeah, we leave there thinking that you really care.
No, yeah, you don't. I suppose Chris will talk about this when we talk about modeling. That's exactly what you don't want to do, is some mechanical tightening of the cheek muscles, because that's not going to yield a good result. You have to kind of think happy.
Exactly. I was, you know, being facetious there, because I think that the genuine smile that you do give, the best way to give a genuine smile is to actually be having a decent time with people and have thoughts, and that causes you to have a smile, right?
I'll tell you the secret. I'm thinking about, I'm going to get to go home soon. That makes me so happy. It's almost over.
That's a great
it's track. Almost
that,
over.
By that reason, I'd be smiling all day.
Hey, what can I see? Now, is your discipline psychology?
It is psychology. It's sort of broadly, but social psychology and emotion and moral judgment, especially ethics and morality and emotions and how emotions play a role in our ethics. So disgust interested me a long time ago because it seems like we use disgust to condemn other people, that face of condemnation that we make.
What is the disgust look? Is it a frown?
It's a wrinkling of the nose and a curling of the upper lips. So it's a little bit like the bitter face. If you give quinine solution to an infant,
oh yeah,
they'll show that the beginnings of that face. And then adults, we expand it beyond just things that are already in our mouth, but to smells, to ideas. And so you see people make this very, very sort of get away from me.
Yeah. Wrinkling the nose, that's to symbolize I've smelled something not so good.
Yeah, and there's some work that actually even helps prevent pathogens from entering the nasal passageways.
Oh, so you're actually doing that.
Yeah, at least there's some evidence for that.
You've seen the videos of babies eating lemons for the first time?
I love those. I love those. It seems so cool, right?
Well, hey, there's always a first time, right? You eat your first lemon. It's kind of a shock. Looks like a piece of fruit. And then it hits you, and it's like, whoa!
And the wonderful thing The wonderful thing about emotional expressions is they're easy to catch. And so you show people those videos, and you can see in their face, you can see them making, you know, some more than others, but they're starting to make that face. You know,
we're built that way. This is where our brains are so good at. And, you know, to tie this back to technology is what computers are so poor at. We're getting better at facial recognition, and there's been some massive improvements in, you know, computer learning and computer intelligence. But there's something, humans are so finely tuned to receiving and understanding expressions, subtle expressions.
Exactly. Our little lump of analog meat there does such a good job. And we get, in our labs here at Cornell, we can get software that can decode facial expressions as they're occurring. But you know what? Get the lighting a little wrong, get the skin a little too dark or the background a little too dark, and it messes it up. Nothing compares to human judges.
It's really interesting.
I mean, the NSA might have us beat. They might know what I'm feeling right now.
I don't know if it's gonna. I don't know if it's gonna happen in my lifetime, because I feel like. Well, that's why handwriting recognition, speech recognition, these things are hard to do. Humans are really good at it, and computers just they're still a little mechanical, and they can't get nuance and subtlety. And
right,
thank goodness,
right?
To
brute force the problem, and
yeah,
it's just not,
very
it's not the way the brain does it. So it's not really the way that we're going to get to it, but I should get to my question and not take up all your listeners' time, but it's related because inspired by you in a whole lot of things, a philosopher friend of mine have a humble little podcast that we started about a year ago.
Is it a philosophy podcast?
It's Philosophy and Psychology of Ethics.
Oh, that sounds great. Tell me, where can I get it?
I hesitate to call and even...
Oh, come on, plug it. Come on, you know you want to, David. I appreciate your reticence. Thank you, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's called Very Bad Wizards, but I should, a bit, verybadwizards.com.
After the Wizard of Oz, who says,
Exactly.
I'm a very bad wizard, but I'm a good man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Verybadwizards.com.
And I should just warn, it's not a Twit family podcast. We took this opportunity to talk like two academics would talk at a bar. So there's a lot of
epithets.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we didn't do it as you taught us well. We do it because we love to do it. And
well, how can I help you? What can I do besides giving you a plug for verybadwizards.com?
Sorry, I really wasn't going to say anything. Because I've called before. You've helped me with audio. You've helped me with Skype. And it's been a great help. And we've been luckily growing our audience a bit to the point where we use Squarespace for our website. And I actually host the files on Amazon because...
Good. S3 storage.
S3,
okay.
Right. I want to just know how I can get a better sense of who's actually subscribed. So I get hits to the RSS links that they give me daily on Squarespace, but I don't know how to convert that into how many people are actually listening or downloading or subscribing.
Welcome to my world. This is
a
challenge.
And I think that this is increasingly...
It's actually a good way to do this, and it's free. The ad agency that we have used for many years for our podcast, Podtrac, PodTrac.com, has a free podcast counting tool that will give you the numbers of downloads. And they do it because eventually they hope that you might get an advertiser. They might sell an ad on your podcast, right?
Right. So I actually am reluctant because I don't care for ads.
No, it doesn't matter. This is free. You don't ever have to sell ads. They just do it because they know in the long run that this will help their business. What you'll be doing is adding what we call a redirect to your RSS feed. So when people click, and we do this, if you look at the full URL.
Yeah, I always see that you have a Podtrac. Yeah.
There's a little redirect at the beginning. So if you go to twit.tv and just right click on or hover over the link, you'll see the full link. And it goes through Podtrac to our file. And what happens, because it does that, Podtrac can... It's a way of recording that you went to our file, and Podtrac can add that. And then they do a bunch of massaging. They make sure that they deduplicate it. So if somebody downloads the podcast 20 times, they still only count once. They make sure that all the IP addresses are unique. They do a lot of work on it. And then they give you a free report, which you can log into your Podtrac account.
And the files are hosted there?
No, it won't. Yeah, it doesn't change anything you're doing. You just add this to the beginning of the link. You continue to host your files in the same spot.
And it won't screw up anybody else's current RSS links?
No.
Okay.
You're not going to change the RSS feed is the same. All you're going to do is when you create the link to your file, you add a little bit of text. They'll explain it to the beginning. And it goes through. It's in effect a way of going through their server to get to your file. And Podtrac does that for free. And it's useful. The other thing,
there's another one called Libsyn, but I don't know that I want to give up control of
host it. In order for that to work, Libsyn hosts it.
Okay.
Now, it's cheaper than S3, than Amazon, so right. I would look at Libsyn. And then you could also use Google Analytics on your S3 site.
Yeah, I try that. Google just gives you so much that it's hard sometimes to tell what of that is an actual subscriber and whatnot. Maybe I'm just out of my depth there.
The other thing I would say is when you get this number, you may be a little sad. It may be 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000. A lot of times, people expect 20 or 30 or 40,000 people listening. But, if you think about that many people in a big room listening to what you say, even if it's only 500, that's pretty darn good. So don't be discouraged. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, hour 3 of the Tech Guy program. Where we're talking computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, digital photography. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll-free from anywhere in the U.S., outside the U.S. Skype will work. Just call that number. It's a toll-free number. Won't cost you a thing. 888-ASK-LEO. Gary calling from Canada. All of Canada, really? Hi, Gary. Where? I bet you're in Saskatchewan, and she just couldn't fit that in. Where are you calling from, Gary? Hello?
Hello?
Where are you calling from, Gary?
I'm calling from Canada, Prince Edward Island.
PEI. She could have fit that in, PEI.
Amber's home territory.
Amber MacArthur, my great co-host for many years on a call for help in Toronto.
Yeah, I just wanted to verify for you, because you said you couldn't verify it a little earlier on in the program, that it is toll-free from Canada.
Ah, wonderful. So I can now start saying toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada.
Well, apparently it worked for me.
You just called 8888-ASK-LEO and it went through.
Yes.
Let me know if you get a bill.
I don't think I will.
Okay, good.
Let me ask you a question while I'm on the air.
But of course, that's what you're here for.
Okay. You mentioned Olympus camera a little earlier.
Yeah.
And I came across a used Olympus camera recently, which I purchased, and I've been having fun learning with it.
Great.
It was a learning camera.
Which one?
It's an older one. It's the 512 Ultra Zoom.
Okay.
And it's taking beautiful pictures, so I'm very, very happy with it. I just wondered if you, what your thoughts were on the Olympus brand.
I am a big fan of the Olympus brand. In fact, they have a newer series of digital cameras that, so the ones we're talking about, the tough camera that I talked about, the TG2, and your Olympus, the 512, are what we call point and shoots. They have a fixed lens, you know, they're compact. Inexpensive cameras, but of course professional photographers like interchangeable lenses, and Olympus has made interchangeable lens cameras DSLRs for some time, but they've got a new kind of mid-range that I am hugely fanatical about now, the OMDs, and we're going, as you might know, I'm taking a vacation in Europe in a couple of weeks, and I was trying to find a lightweight interchangeable lens camera because my big Canon is just so heavy. And I settled on the OMDs, and I've been so happy with the quality, the range of lenses available. And these are Olympus. They're very, very good. So, yeah, they make great stuff.
Good. I have one further question, if I may.
Sure.
With regard to the card that I'm using in this camera, it's an XD card. I'm not very familiar with XD. It's different.
Yeah, these are, and they don't make them anymore.
Okay.
That's one disadvantage.
Yeah.
Everybody's moved to SD. The high-end cameras still use compact flash or CF, but SD is really the way to go.
Okay, so the camera is basically dated?
Yeah, it's pretty
it's
dated.
It's not a problem for me. I'm using it as a learner, and that XD
That's fine.
Is I'm capable of putting in probably 500 photos on that.
So yeah, it's plenty. As Chris Marquardt has told me many times, it's not the camera. It's a photographer, you know. Nobody said Oscar Wilde was a better writer because he used a nice pen. It really is your eye, your ability to compose, to find the shot, to get just the right shot, and even a camera phone can do that. Of course, as you get more proficient, sometimes you want the image quality to improve. You know, sometimes you take a shot, a really great shot, and you say, boy, if only that, you know, there were more detail in that, it were crisper, it would be really wonderful. I could print it in a big size, that kind of thing. And that's when you start moving on to bigger cameras, fancier cameras, and more importantly, I think, than anything, the ability to use different lenses. The real negative, as far as I can tell, with a point-and-shoot and a camera phone, are the one single focal length. You know, you can at least zoom with a point-and-shoot. You can't really zoom effectively with a camera phone. But the ability to say, I'm going to use a wide-angle lens today or a long telephoto lens tomorrow. I'm going to use a very fast lens that lets in a lot of light. Those things really add to the kinds of shots you can get. It still comes down to your eye, your composition, your ability, and I've seen people take much better pictures than I will ever take with a cheap camera or a camera phone. And, you know, that makes me sad. But that's why I spend more money on good cameras, hoping that someday I'll be a better photographer. And it hasn't worked. Randy, Cedar City, Utah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Randy.
Well, hey, Leo.
Hey.
I took your line. Sorry about that.
That has been. You know why I do that? Because I can't say good morning because some people are listening in the afternoon and evening. I can't say good afternoon for the same reason. So I settled on hey, boo boo.
You know how many people follow along with you saying that when?
No, really.
Yeah, I mean I do it. And this morning I was in the shower and I didn't raise my hand.
Thank you.
And listen, another thing, it's not fair that you get to go to the restroom when I'm, you know, I'm stuck on hold because I don't know when Heather's going to barge in.
Oh, good point. Heather's probably heard more than the average bear in that regard, so I wouldn't be shy.
Yeah, boy, she sure is a great addition to your show.
I know, I just adore her. We were lucky because, you know, 11 years with Dr. Dean, and that's a lot of valuable experience. And a call screener, I don't know if people really understand this in talk radio, makes or breaks the show.
Yeah, plus she's not a geek, so she brings...
I beg your pardon. I think she's quite geeky.
You think so? Well, what I mean
she is a geek in a different way. I think she is a normal geek, where she loves technology. She really seems to like technology and enjoy it, but isn't like us, you know, kind of obsessed with it.
Yeah. So listen, I have a kind of a stupid question. I just got myself a Galaxy S4. Love it. And I used to be able to watch Twit on my old smartphone, but now I can't find a decent app so I can watch Twit.
Yeah, let me recommend the one I use, which is from F-CON. It's called twit.tv. Twit, for those who don't know, is my podcast network. We do podcast this show. We also stream it live. You can watch it on your smartphone using a smartphone app like the FCON app. On the iOS side, I recommend the Shift Key software app. He has one for Android, but with all due respect, I like the FCON one the best.
Okay. How come you don't make one?
You know, we should. If I had unlimited funds, we would. But it's expensive. You know, we looked into making a game, of all things, and it was $100,000. And I said, well, I guess we won't be doing that. Making apps, a good app, is not a trivial thing. We'd have to hire a programmer, basically, to do it. Okay. So what we've chosen to do is you can do it on the web. You know, twit.tv works on mobiles. If you are on Android, go to m.twit.tv, I think, the mobile page. So we do support it via the web, but we let third parties make the apps because, you know, it's not just Android and iPhone. There's also Windows Phone. Dmitry Lialin has done a great app for that. Smart TVs. We have a Samsung app. We have a Roku app. And there are different programmers for many of those, and we just couldn't afford to do all of those. So we thank our community. I mean, they really do a great job.
Well, I'll check out FCON for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to say thanks for getting on Google Plus more often.
Yeah, I love Google Plus. I've always from day one I've liked Google Plus, but it hasn't attracted the massive crowd that Facebook has or Twitter. I think you have to use all three. Google Plus is the place I go for good conversation and great looking pictures. Oh, it's fabulous!
Absolutely.
For that. Yeah.
Okay, so will you ever incorporate a Google Plus Hangout?
We have many times. In fact,
I mean on your Twitch show.
Yeah, we have many times. Generally, we do that on the live coverage. So, for instance, September 10th, when we do the live iPhone launch coverage, we will probably have a Hangout. We have done that in the past. And we use, believe it or not, Hangouts for some of our contributors on the podcasts. And I've done a few Hangouts, and it's fun. It's hard, a little harder to manage, but that's okay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy from Temecula, comes our next call. Jake, you're on the line. Hi, Jake. Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo. Great show. Thank you. I'm off to Paris on Wednesday.
Well, la-di-da.
Hey, you know, we work hard. We got to play.
I know. I love Paris. I'm probably going in December for Le Web. Yeah, I love it.
One of my favorite spots.
Me too.
I've got at my office, I have an Uma box, which I love.
Yeah. Uma is voice over the internet telephony. You plug it into your internet connection, and you make phone calls with it.
Correct. All around the world, I've got friends and relatives in Israel, in South Africa, where I come from, Australia. I've sent them all little magic jacks.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if it's legal or not, but we speak to each other, they speak to each other, and everyone has a local Temecula phone number, which is great.
Oh, that's clever.
So now in Paris, I really am trying to have a vacation and stay away from the business. But because I'm a small business owner, I need to be in touch.
Right.
I don't want to do a whole voice or data plan. I just want to use their Wi-Fi. I've been told that their Wi-Fi is pretty good. So I'm looking at either Google Voice or Magic Jack on my phone.
Alas, Google Voice doesn't work internationally.
Uh-huh.
So we just eliminated that. It's too bad because it's really great, but they've not rolled it out globally. You can make calls with Google Voice from the U.S., but you can't do it from Paris.
Okay. So basically putting Magic Jack on my phone is the way to do it.
I would just use Skype. Then you don't need any hardware. Magic Jack, really. It's funny because it's, I guess it's replacing a computer. It's got a computer, you know, a little processor in it and stuff. But you're bringing a laptop, aren't you?
No. There's an app. You can go. I've got an Evo, and you can just go.
Yeah. No, but you need something with a CPU, and so the Magic Jack USB key will work with just a phone. But if you're bringing a smartphone or a laptop, I would just use Skype.
Okay.
Why pay for a service when Skype is free?
Yeah, that's true.
And I can't remember what the price for, you know, the high-end Skype Deluxe or whatever they call it, but something around $99 a year with international incoming and outbound calls. You get a phone number. I think Skype is a simple solution. If you like Magic Jack, it's very similar. Skype gives you video, which is nice. If somebody else is using Skype, you can see them. They can see you.
Right. I just want something that works. You know, Magic Jack's been great because I've sent 20 units around the world. And
I'm amazed. That's really a cool idea. Yeah. Yeah, I think Skype's going to work fine, but yeah, you could use Magic Jack. It's just the same idea. The idea is voice over IP, Internet Protocol, or VoIP, and it just means all you need is a connection. The real challenge is going to be getting a good strong signal. If you're in a hotel in Paris that has Wi-Fi, chances are it'll be adequate for voice.
Okay, that's what I needed. Yeah. Thanks, Leo.
You're welcome. Hey, have a great trip. What fun.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, Jack, sorry about that. Welcome, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm better if you can help me.
Okay. I'll take the challenge. Fire away.
I'm using Windows XP, and I have blue screen of death.
Mm-mm. Okay, turn off the internet because I hear myself coming back to me.
Hang on a minute.
That'll confuse you. We always have to say turn off the radio, but the problem is turning off the internet because the internet is closer in time than the radio.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, the radio's 40 seconds. The internet is almost instant. So you have XP, and you're getting a blue screen of death every time or just sometimes?
Yeah, as soon as I boot up, I used to be able to get into safe mode, but now I can't get into safe mode. When I try F8, the only options I have is F1 or F2 to get into setup utility.
So what that's saying is that something's pretty seriously wrong. Blue screens on XP and later mean that either the hardware is failing or a driver is crashing. It's such a bad crash that the computer can't go on. You know, if a program, if Internet Explorer crashes on Windows, you continue to use Windows. Explorer dies, you relaunch it. But when you get a blue screen, that means this is such a bad crash, I can't go on. And there's only a couple of things that can cause this: bad hardware or a driver, something that has access to system memory. And usually if it's a driver, going into a safe mode will eliminate that problem, right? Because that's what safe mode is. Load with the minimum set of drivers. It still has to load some, but just not the typical ones you're using. If you can't get into safe mode, then probably what has happened is either you've got some hardware that's gone bad, a memory chip that's bad, or something like that. And I hope that's not the case, because that's hard to diagnose and hard to fix. Usually not cheap to fix. Or, and I'm hoping this is the case, and it's probably more likely, you've had a hard drive problem, and the software that's going to load when Windows is loading is crashing the computer. And that can happen. You know, one bit changed on a critical system file can cause this. It doesn't have to be a catastrophic failure. It could literally be just one bit. So the first thing I would do, if you've got a Windows install disk, and I hope you do, and I hate it that computers are sold these days without, is to run it as if you're going to install it. At one point, it'll say, hey, wait a minute, I see Windows on here. You say, yes, would you repair that? Press R. If that repairs it, you're golden. If not, you might have to replace the hard drive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Bespoke Post. Do you know about this? Have you ever received a box of awesome? Would you like to? took my boxes home. I have a bunch of boxes of awesome. You want to see the box of awesome, go to BESPOKE, bespokepost.com/twit, and you can find out all about it. Bespoke Post, or Bespoke is the name of the company, is a curated boxes of great goodies. The box of awesome, they call it. It's $45 for a box, but you're guaranteed to get something worth more than $45. If you browse around, you can see the variety of bespoke stuff. I mean, there's the queue. Are you bringing me a bespoke? Oh, thank you, Burke. A box of awesome has been delivered.
I'm not sure if it's the right one.
Well, what is the right one? Is there a right box of awesome?
No.
They're all wonderful. That's the truth of it. So imagine this as a gift. Every month you're going to get it, and you just open it up, and you look inside, and you say, what's in my box of... Oh, this is the cue box. This is a nice one. I have this one at home. In fact, this got me so excited that I actually went out and I bought some of the things I got in it, like the ketchup, the Kensington ketchup. This is gourmet ketchup. You've never had such good ketchup in your life. So they've got ketchup. They've got tin mustard, also amazing. They've got a little jar of honey in here. And then you also get some rubs. This is from Napa Valley Whole Spice. These are incredible rubs. In fact, I don't know if you're a barbecuer, this is to me, this was like heaven. The Moroccan harissa seasoning. This is the one I put on chicken, chipotle and honey. barbecued chicken breast. Unbelievable. Chimichurri dry seasoning. You also get some planks. You ever barbecue with planks? Get these out here. So you soak these wooden planks. And then you put a salmon or you wouldn't do a steak on it, but a fish is really good. There's alder, hickory, and these are reusable. You can use them a few times as cedar. And it just, oh, the flavor just goes right through the fish or the meat, and it's amazing. And then, well, that's not all. There's also some special pepper from India, hand-harvested single estate sun-dried black pepper. See what, you getting the idea here? And there's more. This is the cue box, but there's a different box every month. I got a wine decanter one month, martini mixing set another month. You learn so much. Could you use a steak on the... I'll have to try the steak on the altar. So here's the deal. If you go to bespokepost.com/twit, you'll be taking 20% off the first month of your subscription. $45 a box. That includes shipping and easy returns. Of course, you see what the box is ahead of time, so you can opt out anytime and never be charged if you don't want it. 1 month gift, $45. 3 months, $135. Half a year, $270. It's great for the guy who has everything. Bespokepost.com/twit. Get a box of awesome every month. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. You got robbed, sir. I gave you pepper. Here, have a nice bottle of ketchup, too, to go with that pepper. There you go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're passing out door prizes.
It's like the Oprah show.
It is.
Look under your seat.
Instead of an iPad, you're getting spices.
You're going home in a new Prius.
No.
Oh,
stop
sorry.
It. Poor guy. I gave. So we have a family visiting from
Union City.
And I gave them rubs, you know, for like steak. There's chipotle honey rub and stuff. And then another fellow's visiting. He's dropping off his kid at Pepperdine. He's visiting from Chicago.
Oh, excellent.
And I gave him a bag of pepper. That's rotten. That's terrible. So I'm giving you some ketchup, too, to go with the pepper. Actually, that's the best ketchup ever. Yeah, I went online. I ordered more bottles of it. It's really good. It's a party here at the Tech Guy Labs.
The family came together. There's got to be a saying there. The family that geeks together.
Oh, yeah. It's a family of geeks, definitely. Yeah,
geeks
that's
together,
them.
Squeaks together.
You know, we've had here, you know, I should explain what's going on. We have an open studio. We allow people to come anytime. You can email tickets at twit.tv, and there's no tickets. You can just come, but if you let us know, we'll make sure there's a chair for you. And of course, under that chair, a new car. But no, new car not included. But we get people from all walks of life, from all over the world. It's really fun, and almost always people from Australia and Canada come by because it's, you know, internet global thing. But what's weird, the weirdest people we get are honeymooners. And I never understand that. Honey, I have a dream. For our honeymoon, We're going to go watch the Tech Guy show. Oh, boy. Yeah, you got to wonder about that. Huh? Actually, I think it happens a lot. I know. It happens more than one would think.
Well, we're so close to wine country. Maybe that's...
I always say to the guy, now make sure you take your new wife out to a nice dinner to make up for bringing her to this. And we do have a do not sue us contract. We do. We didn't used to make people sign a waiver. You think I'm joking? We used to be just walk in here, and some guy fell. He tripped. Oh. And I felt terrible. I mean, I hurt his knee. And we're just waiting for the lawsuit. I just like looking over my... So now we make you sign a 4-page waiver.
I thought it was because you chucked a bottle of ketchup at his head.
I did actually throw... I can now throw ketchup at you. I don't have to worry.
That would hurt.
He signed a waiver. That no matter what Leo throws at me, I cannot sue.
All righty then.
You feel better. We didn't make you sign the waiver, Heather?
Oh, no, not yet. I guess I should hurry up and get hurt.
Hurry up and get hurt. If you're going to get hurt, get hurt.
Bonked my head on this camera.
Who should I talk to next,
Heather? Oh, Lordy. Let's go to London, shall we? Speaking of global trekking.
Jolly good. Say hello to Addy in London, UK. Hi, Addy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for calling. I'm glad to know you're listening.
Yeah, I'm actually calling to you via Skype on my brand new Samsung Galaxy S4 Mini.
Oh, you got the Mini, huh? That's the little one.
Yeah, because I was considering getting myself either Galaxy S3 or some other phone. But the problem is with these bigger phones is that I want to be able to use them in one hand.
Right.
And, you know, the smaller, I found that the smaller devices are, you know, better for my hands. Each their own, as they say.
Well, and that's exactly right. In fact, that's really Samsung's marketing strategy, is to make every possible size. And then you pick the size that fits your hand. I think that's sensible. Makes a lot of sense. Now, let me ask you. You're using Skype, because you remember we had the caller a few minutes ago who's going to Paris. Do you find Skype works well for international calling?
Funny enough you mentioned that, because I haven't actually tested this. But so far it has worked well for me. I've done a call to India once on it. So far it's working okay.
When my daughter lived in Paris for a year in high school, I set her up with unlimited Skype, which was great because she could sit on her computer in France and call her friends, even call their cell phones, and it was free because I'd already paid the flat rate. And I think that really helped a little bit with the homesickness. It really made it possible for her to visit with us. We would make weekly video calls, and it was really like she wasn't quite so far away.
So true.
Yeah. So what can I do for you?
Well, actually, it's more like what I can do for your audience. Because I'd like to break the mold and do a suggestion.
Please do.
So a lot of people like me, they may want to switch over from iPhone or BlackBerry or maybe a old Nokia Symbian device to the Galaxy S4 or a Galaxy S4 Mini in my case. And they can use a tool called Samsung Smart Switch. It's available for Mac or PC. It's free. And what you do is you just simply back up your device, your previous device, and then after your backup, you just simply plug in your Samsung Galaxy S4. You choose whatever you want, say your notes, your music, your video, your podcasts, and wherever you have space for it, it will just basically, in one click, transfer everything for you.
So this does this on a desktop or a laptop computer, so it's for Windows or Mac.
Yes.
That's clever, because then you essentially, as you would with an iPhone, you're backing up your telephone, your mobile, to the computer, and then restoring it to the new mobile.
Yeah, and I've also found that the transfer did actually go really well, because it also transferred call logs and text messages.
Yeah, so you really feel like you're back at home. You know, everybody seems to be doing this. HTC does this now. When I first got my HTC One, they have a transfer program that will copy from any other HTC phone or other phones and copy as much as they can. Obviously, if you're moving from a different platform, it's not going to be quite as thorough.
Yeah.
And I noticed that Motorola has a migration wizard on the new Moto X that does much the same thing.
Indeed, they do. I mean, it's just, I think this is really good that all these different
companies are
doing this.
Because, you need it. And it acknowledges the fact that people are buying new phones more often than they used to. It used to be you'd buy a phone, you don't change it for years. But they're like computers now. They're being upgraded all the time. And so...
Exactly. I mean, and also it can be really hard to find, you know, the right tool for the average consumer to, you know, transfer your stuff over. It can just be a real hassle. And I'm just so thankful I stumbled upon this.
Now, does this work? It works for, obviously, Samsung to Samsung phones. Will it work for non-Samsung phones or even non-Android phones? What does it work with?
As far as I've been able to verify, it works with the, at the moment, the Samsung Galaxy S4 Mini, if you want to transfer to that, Galaxy S4, the S4 Active, it's basically the entire S4 line.
Yeah, so it's for transferring from one Galaxy to another, basically.
No, it's transferring from an iPhone.
Oh, it works for an iPhone, too. Oh, good.
Yeah,
good.
No. You
know what they have that I love? They and actually, Microsoft just did this for Windows Phone. It'll look at the apps on your old phone. And given if you're moving from, say, an iPhone to Windows Phone or from an iPhone to Android, you're not going to have a duplicate exactly one for one. It will recommend apps so that you know which apps are going to give you similar functionality to what you're used to. That's clever.
Yeah. By the way, it's not just iPhone. It's also BlackBerry and old school, you know, Nokia Symbian device.
Symbian. Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
As far as
I know, Samsung Smart Switch, that's the name.
That's the name, and it's Samsung from Samsung.com. Hey, thank you, Addy. I appreciate it. It's really nice to talk to you.
And it's really nice to talk to you, too. I've got some other stuff to get on with, so I better let you go and let you take care of some other callers.
All right, Addy. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And now we're going to go is it Liebeck? Rob in the... It's Liebeck.
It's Liebeck.
Liebeck.
I think it's French. I don't know.
Where is it?
At the top of the grapevine between Los Angeles and Bakersfield.
I've never heard of Liebeck, and I've driven by it, I guess, many
times.
Well,
I'm looking out the window, and I can see I-5.
Yeah, I'm sure I've gone 80 miles an hour right by Liebeck and never even noticed it.
And you never noticed my house either. And I am a real Neanderthal, man. I know nothing about electronics. I just bought my very first computer because
Hang on, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, you're next, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. We were talking to Rob in Liebeck, perhaps of French origin, somewhere on the grapevine in beautiful California. I'm sorry to have cut you off, Rob.
Not a problem, sir. You got to do what you got to do. As I say, I'm a Neanderthal, and I know nothing about electronics. I just bought my first computer because my business partner made me, and I'm thoroughly intimidated by it. But that's not why I'm calling.
Okay.
My problem is a relatively new product called DVD-R. They don't mass produce them.
Well, you really are a Neanderthal. That's not new. That's like 15 years old, dude.
Well, I just became aware of it about a year ago. But they don't mass produce them. They make it on your request, and they're kind of pricey. Wait a minute.
Okay, so DVD-R is recordable DVDs. They've been out for years.
This sounds like this is a company that does something like that. In this case, though, sir, you order a particular title, and they record it for you and send it to you.
I see.
For about $25.
What's their website?
I just get catalogs in the mail, and some of them say DVD-R, and some of them don't.
How odd.
And I can't play them. And I called Philips up, that's my DVD player, and they say, yeah, we didn't conform our players to use those. And so I think it's time to step up to Blu-ray, which will play them, and also I can collect Blu-rays rather than the lowly DVDs where they're available.
I wouldn't buy a DVD player these days, but although you can get them at your local Kmart for $29.99.
Okay, five quick questions for you then.
Yes.
Really quick.
Five. I'm counting.
I can't hook my Blu-ray to my ancient TV with RCA plugs.
No, you cannot. That's correct.
Okay, I need an HDTV.
Okay.
Second, are there Blu-ray players? I grew up in the 1950s, you know, wearing cardboard glasses to see 3D movies.
Me too.
Fine with me.
Yes.
Are there Blu-ray players with passive 3D rather than those pricey?
It's not the player, it's the active glasses. Yeah, it's not the player, it's a TV. And yes, there are, but you have to buy a TV with passive glasses. Panasonic Vieiras are passive and very good.
Okay. What do you like?
Panasonic Vieiras are not. The Vizios are passive, but the Blu-ray player doesn't matter. It's just sending a 3D signal to the TV. It's the TV that decides what kind of glasses you need.
Okay, what do you like, plasma or pixel?
Plasma.
Got it.
That's three. HD, you got two more.
Number three. Will my HD TV accept the three RCA jacks from my VHS, DVD, and Pioneer Laserdisc players?
Usually it will. You will be very disappointed with what you see. They will not look good because all of a sudden you're watching them on a good display and you'll realize how low quality VCRs are. Lasers will look okay, but they're really not high resolution and you're putting them on a high resolution display. But most HD
TV does now, my 20-year-old Magnum.
It'll look worse, yeah, because your old TV is smearing them. It's not showing all the ugly, gory details, unfortunately, but your HDTV will. Now, by the way, not all HDTVs will have what you have is composite. That's red, white, and yellow plugs. Not all have them. Most do, and just make sure when you buy it, it does.
I shall do that.
And I love Laserdiscs. I'm glad. How many Laserdiscs do you have?
Oh, too many. I went for it nuts.
Have you ever heard of eBay?
No.
There'll be a wonderful time will come when you need money, and eBay will be your best friend on those laser discs. Question five.
I like them fine. The only thing I don't like about them is turning them over in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, that is annoying, isn't it?
Fourth, aspect ratio. I don't understand what they're doing with these HTVs.
It's very simple. Your current television is 4x3. That is some multiple of 4 across and 3 up and down.
It's 1.33 to 1.
Yeah. Movies, of course, when you go to a movie, they're widescreen. They're actually not 16x9. They're wider. But the HDTVs are 16x9, not 4x3. And 16x9 will show an HD television show exactly right. And a movie, there'll be little letterboxes.
They're not cutting anything off?
Pardon me?
They're not cutting anything off at the top of the bottom to stretch it out that far?
Not if you watch HDTV television, like HBO. If you're watching a movie, they will. You'll see black bar top and bottom.
I'm into old movies. 30s and 40s.
Those are all 4.3. In the old days,
they're 1.37.
That's right.
Am I going to see, like, is James Cagney going to be stretched out? And
you'll have choices. Every TV has choices. You'll watch it. You'll want to watch it in natural mode or dot by dot, which means there'll be
an adjustment on them.
They have an adjustment. There'll be black bars on the left and right to make the aspect ratio 4.3.
Well, that's okay. I mean, because I have CinemaScope movies. And
yes, exactly. Now, when you watch Lawrence of Arabia, it's much wider than 16.9, so there'll be black bars top and bottom, but still it will look much better. There won't be as much black bars as there would be on your old TV.
Okay, I think that's it, except when they advertise a DVD, what do they mean by digital copy included?
Ah, so this is mostly on Blu-rays these days, and it's because they thought, although it's not true, that you couldn't take a Blu-ray and put it on your laptop or your tablet and watch it. So to discourage piracy, they offer a copy-protected digital version suitable for copying to a mobile device. That's as a convenience to you and mostly to discourage you from figuring out how to crack the copy protection and doing it yourself. They're okay. There's a number of ways to do it. They all have copy protection, which means they're less flexible than one might want. But almost all Blu-rays now come with these digital copies. Hey, I'm telling you, you're going to love the improvement. You're going to love it. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at Carbonite.com, Carbonite Online Backup. You can try it free for 2 weeks. Carbonite, Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo, for the free trial. Actually, I think John, who is it wants to talk about Carbonite? That's Richard in Oxnard, California. So let me get Richard on here real quickly. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Richard.
Hi.
So you had a question about Carbonite.
Yeah, I'm interested in it, and I hear you advertising and so forth. But with the government spying on us and every electronic media they can find, how safe is the your backup there? But
that's a really good question. So it's safe. In fact, there's a kind of encryption called trust no one. That means that only you have the keys. And a lot of online backup does not support this. Carbonite does. So Carbonite's one of the... You lose some features when you do this. You lose the ability to look at it from a mobile device, things like that. But if what you want is pure privacy, Carbonite is as good as you can get. It's trust no one encryption. That means even if the government comes to Carbonite with a subpoena, or a national security letter, Carbonite can only say, you know, we don't have the keys to this stuff. We can't give it to you. You better go ask the guy. They have to get the passphrase from you. You created the key. It's like PGP encryption. So if that's what you're looking for, that's, I think, a good choice. Now, the one weak link would be maybe the transport from your computer to the Carbonite servers. Carbonite uses SSL for that. That also is encryption, strong encryption. But Carbonite does have the keys to that. So, and this is going to be true in every single case for anything you do online. If the government does come to a company and say, look, we want the SSL keys, and the company turns those over, which they're bound to do by U.S. law, then they can intercept the transfer up. They can't get whatever's up there already, but they can get whatever is going through the public internet on the way up. So that's important to understand. SSL protects you, but only if the government doesn't have the keys. And in fact, we know they've been going to, unfortunately, companies like Google and others and saying, we want the keys. We want the SSL keys. And then that's a little bit scary. Google has implemented something, and Carbonite, I'm sure, will implement it if they haven't already, called Perfect Forward Security. That does help you in this case. It prevents them from getting older keys and looking at older transfers. We know, for instance, the NSA is collecting everything that happens now, even if they don't have the keys, right? Well, if they could go and they could go to Carbonite or Google and say in 6 months, hey, give us the old keys, because they change those keys regularly. Give us the old keys. We have the data from 6 months ago. We just need the old keys. Perfect Forward Security prevents that. Prevents that. Heather Hammon, thank you so much. Our musical director, Nathan Staten, thank you. Thank you for being here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.